Matt and Jen, my goodness, what a film you have created. It is so much fun. Tony steals the entire film, just so you know that.
Yes. We haven't told the actors that, but yes.
And I have to say, the casting of Desmond, the anxiety-ridden, the haplessness, the unemployed, he's perfect in that role. But what I love with the structure of this film and the story, with what the two of you have done, is the whole idea of losing the dog and desperately needing to find this dog forces him in out of his shell, out of his comfort zone, and sets the stage for him to realize there is a world around him and he can make friends and he can embrace something new. And I just love that. It's such a great message to people. And the way you execute it is so beautifully done.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That means a lot. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you were writing this script, did you always have Portland, Maine in mind? What was the thought process for developing this script? Yep.
So we moved up to Portland, Maine from New York in 2020, and we just were really creatively inspired by the city, and we hadn't seen it on film very much, and just felt like it lent itself so beautifully to film. There's so many little nooks and crannies of the city, and also just the people that we were meeting after moving here. Mainers have such a distinct spirit to them, and everybody that we met was just, I don't know, we were taking like little threads and bits of pieces of the people that we were meeting as we were kind of fish out of water here, like Desmond or the character of Walt, and so we kind of started crafting this screenplay. And the idea of, you know, a guy who gets his girlfriend's dog stolen. Matt had that idea kind of bopping around in his head for several years, because when we met about 12 years ago, I had a fur baby who actually we still have. He's about 15.
Aww.
And when they met, there was a little animosity between them, a little jealousy. And so I think that was kind of what created the kernel of that plot idea. Once we moved up to Portland, it felt like there was nowhere else that it could be.
Portland, it looks beautiful on film, I gotta tell you. Having Portland as location, Matt, for you as the director, working with your cinematographer, working with Nathan, how did that impact your directorial choices in terms of your visual tonal bandwidth?
Both of us and Nathan come from the documentary world, and I think with this film, I really just wanted to lean into our tendencies and what I knew we could accomplish in an 18-day shoot. And also not revert to like flashy, almost tourism-y imagery of Portland, and just be a little more matter of fact with the visuals and everything from how Tony the dog is filmed to the interplay with the characters, and just not being too decorative, because Nathan is such a talented cinematographer that I didn't want to like overdo it. I felt like it would be enough, you know. Mm-hmm. And I felt like this film is about people and performances, and yeah, just to keep it really simple and bare bones and lean into those documentary tendencies and leave the sort of rough edges in, you know, if a shot slips out of focus for a moment, that's great. You know, like, I mean, I guess technically, no, that's not great, but like, for all purposes, if the performance is intact, I don't care if, you know, that slips out or, mm-hmm. None of that stuff matters to me, so.
Well, and by keeping it very straightforward with the lensing, it allows you to really work with your location as you're going up and down streets and you're at the water and you go into wooded areas and you really get to take advantage of everything that location has to offer. You don't need to embellish upon it because it adds so much texture to poor hapless Walt. And I don't know where I'm going. I don't know where I am. And I got to find this dog. So you really take us on a great little circuitous tour almost of the area. And by keeping your camera work clean and unfettered, we really get to embrace that and appreciate it with fresh eyes, just like Walt is seeing it all with fresh eyes. And I like that aspect.
Thank you. I'm glad that works for you.
Now, you mentioned very important part, how you shoot the dog. So I got to ask, how did you shoot the dog? How well did Mr. Tibbs take direction as Tony? Was he a diva? What were the challenges? Because he's off leash in many instances.
Oh, he's off leash. He is indeed off leash.
How do you direct the dog?
I mean, very early on, I think we both knew that this was a slippery slope to make your first feature contain, you know, a dog for maybe over a third of the film. Tony's in there. And so we met very early on. Once we found the dog and the trainers and owners that we dug, we had a few sessions with them where we're just going over the script, and they would flag things where they would say, this is going to be very hard. What if instead of jumping into the car, he's wagging his tail at the side of the car? That's a terrible example, but like they would come up with sort of these simple solutions, and I think it was my job to just sort of, and Jen too was there, to just sort of say, that's great, that doesn't affect any of the story. And sometimes it would add even a nice layer of humor, you know, the suggestions that they would ask for. And then on set, you know, you're dealing with a wonderful creature who, he doesn't care what's going on, so he's probably the most pure and raw person there. But he did have a window of time where his energy, you know, he might get overheated in a scene, notably the bedroom scene. He was panting a lot because there's a lot of humans in a small room filming a scene. And so it was just being mindful of that, of like, hey, we don't have a zillion takes. And not that I like running a million takes, but it was just being very controlled and economic with the shots.
Well,
Letting Tony be Tony.
And, you know, having a dog there also, very important here. You're talking about how we get overheated and the panting. But did you cater to his needs with craft services and the food?
That is an important question. Do you remember?
I think, as far as I remember, he was on a pretty controlled diet by his trainers and his owners, and so they had plenty of treats for him, but I think other people were not encouraged to give him treats because it's also sort of part of his training and you know, making sure that he knew where the treats were coming from so that he was reacting to the right person.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He's so cute. Everybody should just give him treats anyway and let him just run all over the place and just make Matt's life a living hell. So
I think once we wrapped, we did all kind of get to snuggle him and give him treats and treat him like, you know, a dog, which I think he's happy about.
How difficult was the casting of this film, including casting Tony? You have some wonderful two-legged performers. You've got Desmond, who is perfect as Walt, Kelly O'Sullivan. I love Barbara Rosenblatt as Marianne. She adds so much truth and reality here. I just love her performance. But how difficult, how challenging was your casting process?
You want to take it?
I mean, it was challenging, you know. I think logistically in indie film, there's always going to be challenges when it comes to casting because, you know, obviously our budget was lower than people are used to working with, and we also were asking people to come out to Maine in April, which is called mud season here. And so you're asking a lot of people, but we really lucked out. And I think, you know, with Desmond in particular, he was on our list from day one. And so we wrote him a letter and had our casting director send it to his people with the script. And
along with Kelly, too.
Yeah, Kelly was on our list as well from the get-go because we had seen her in St. Francis and loved that film. And so, yeah, we wrote them letters and asked if they would be willing to kind of go on an adventure with us. And we're so fortunate that they both said yes. And then, I mean, with Barbara, she was an audition. And you know, once I put two and two together that she had played Miss Rosa on Orange is the New Black, I was like, oh, yes, I love this woman. but her audition was just, it was like she had crawled into our heads and just knew exactly who we wanted Marianne to be. And she just brought so much to the character, and it was just incredible. We're so thrilled with her performance. And then Steve Coulter, who plays Brent on the island, mm-hmm. somebody that Des brought to the table. We were having a hard time casting that role, and Desmond was like, you know, I actually just worked with this guy, Steve Coulter, on a film called Shotgun Wedding with J-Lo, and he's like, he's the funniest guy I've ever met. So he asked us to take a look at Steve, and at first we were a little skeptical just because everything we could find of his was very serious. and then we talked with him on a Zoom, and he was, in fact, hilarious. And again, yeah, he's just another one where, you know, now we just can't imagine anybody else as Brent. And so we feel extremely fortunate with casting.
I mean, you lucked out. It's not just the individual performances that work so well, but it's the chemistry. Desmond's character, Walt and Marianne, that is such a key dynamic. So important that if there wasn't a chemistry there, if there was not a connection, a big part of this film would have fallen flat. But the two of them are fantastic together. She's there with the come to Jesus lecturing of Walt. That, you know, it's shape up, buddy. You know, get a grip. And it's, yeah. And then he gets a different kind of, but similar kind of lesson from Brent. So the chemistry between your different pairings here and the relationship dynamics works really, really well. That's so key in this film, guys. And you did a great job with that.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I mean, I think our favorite, when we think about our favorite films and sort of the spirit we were going for, it is all about relationships on screen and feeling like, oh, that reminds me of this thing I have with my brother, or that banter is, you know, yeah, you have to buy into it. I think because a movie is all made up and it's all artificial. There's artifice to it. So if the performances are stilted and strange, then you really can't buy into the just that framework of a movie. You're mm-hmm. like, I'm so aware that this is performative, and it, you know, so we're glad that works.
Yeah. I was just gonna say, I feel like the best indicator that we've had of people thinking that the characters and performances were authentic is that everybody seems to think that Matt is Walt and I am Wendy, and they ask us like, oh, you know, so do you know like a Brent on Peaks Island, and do you know a Marianne? And we're like, well, okay, something must be working if they think that it's all just real people in our lives.
Yeah, it's not meant to be a reflection of any, you know, they're dabs, of course, from our reality, but it's not meant to be like something out of our memoir or something. Anyway.
Well, now the authenticity that comes through in the relationships, in the chemistry, various chemistries. I'm curious, in terms of the script, how strictly did you stick to the dialogue on the printed page? How much improv did you allow? Because of the natural ebb and flow that we get, the conversational take.
I think that before. But like, not a, you weren't technically, hey, you're also co-directing, but I did feel like, yeah, we this is a big collaboration together, and I think the sort of improv that did find its way into the film, I think it was after, you know, after you're running with takes and it's feeling like it's clicking and, you know, you want to loosen up the bolts a little bit, and everyone in the cast is so capable of just sort of like letting things unspool naturally that yeah, I think it just made sense. Little dabs here and there, but there's not like an excessive amount. There's not like a scene that's just like this rift moment.
Except for the drunk, the jamming.
Oh yeah, the jamming scene, sorry.
With Brent and Walt, where, yeah, you really did just sort of let them play for a while.
Yeah. And again, because they're chums in real life, I think you buy into the fact that I think you do meet people sometimes and instantly strike up a connection with them, and you buy into that little this one night adventure. It's like a 2-day adventure that they have together, but they've bonded so quickly together. Yeah, I think that's where that drunk scene is. I think people enjoy that scene.
Mm-hmm.
I would cut that scene out, but I did not in the end, obviously.
Well, I'm glad you did not cut it out, but speaking of cutting things out, what, because you also edited this, Matt, what was your editing process like? Were you editing in your head as you were going? Did you, to get an idea of what you wanted, did you wait till you had everything, all of your footage, and then put together an assembly and go from there? Walk me through that process.
That's such a good question. I feel like we haven't gotten that question before. I think for me, I really didn't want to, like, be piecemealing scenes as we were shooting.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to just, like, have a clean break from, like, I'm directing right now, and then the next phase is editing. There was one scene in particular I did look at over, like, one weekend because I wasn't sure that we had gotten the coverage and the performances that we needed, and I just wanted to make sure that it was going to connect in the end. But really, my job as the editor, I was trying to be judicious, and, you know, I also was trying to not over-bake the movie, overcook mm-hmm. it. Because as an editor, a lot of the times I'm aware of that you've gone through, like, too many versions of a thing, and it becomes mushy, and you're not, it doesn't have that soul anymore to it. And we really gave ourselves 2.5-3 months in the edit room, which is, I think that's relatively short compared
yeah.
to a lot of features, and that was just out of necessity and finances, really. And of course, once you lock the picture, you're like, oh, I should have, oh God, why didn't I do that? But that's kind of, you know, like, that's kind of part of the beauty of making this stuff, is it's a reflection of who you were in that passage of time, and if you keep touching it and prodding it and like, yeah, it just kind of unnecessary. It's not, you know, you can, I know that people are always like, it's never done, but I do think things should be completed to a degree. Like, it you know.
You have to let it go.
You have to let it go, yeah.
I mean, there's always something else you can do, but whether you should do it or not, that becomes the question.
Yeah.
I think that's a great point to make, is like, are you just overthinking at that point? And is it even a good decision that you're adding to the pot now? You know, like, so yeah, it's kind of like honoring the scratches that you see in it, or the imperfections that you're like, oh boy, I wish. And it's like, who cares in the end? You know, like, because obviously we care a great deal making this, but you have to let it go at a certain point.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious, Jen, did you provide a second set of eyes at all in the editing process? Because I know some filmmakers, if they're editing and directing, and they don't have a second set of eyes at times, things can very quickly either turn into a brain freeze or go awry. So I'm curious if you provided any kind of second look to keep Matt balanced.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that was, you know, the benefit of us living together is that I didn't pop my head in whether he wanted me to or not, but think, yeah, you know, overall, I mean, Matt is such a fantastic editor, and I think it helped him so much as a director as well, because he did kind of, he knew what he needed going into every scene, and I think that when you're working with such a tight schedule, it helps so much to not be kind of sitting there going, oh, I don't know, maybe we should get more of this or that. And so I think once we got into the edit, he had been kind of putting things together in his head. And so really for me, it became more about kind of the feeling of the take that was in there. And yeah, it just felt authentic to the character, if it felt, you know, as funny as it could be, and all of those things that, you know, that obviously you have to take into account in the edit. I think, you know, I probably got a little precious in terms of lines that were getting cut out, and I joked to Matt, like, one day there will be the writer's cut of Hang Dog. But, you know, now I realize that every cut he made was the right call, and
that's very generous. I'm not sure.
Well, I have to say that now because we can't go back.
Yeah, I mean it's there are many challenges when you're, you know, making a film, and then to make it with your partner, it's like there are many challenges on top of that. So I think obviously hearing each other out, and then we did invite a lot of, like, the producers were obviously weighing in, and then we had like test screening with close collaborators and friends. And yeah, people who have, like, who don't work in film, just watching it. And I think I would argue that those notes are the most important. As someone who's completely removed from the project and maybe doesn't work in film at all, because everyone's got their own sort of wiring and agenda. And yeah, we kind of just wanted to make this film for anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of sit back and enjoy, and hopefully watch. We wanted to make a film that you'd want to watch again, because to your point, Debbie, that the relationships are, like, you want to hang out with Barbara.
Yeah.
Hang out with Marianne again, you know, like, yeah. So.
Look, the secret is you put in a cute, adorable dog. Everybody wants to hang out with Tony the dog. So people are going to watch this movie again and again to see Tony the dog. So you're guaranteed repeat viewings here, guys. Forget about the people.
We cracked it.
You cracked it. That is the code. Put in the cute dog and have somebody who is so irresponsible that they lose this cute dog. And everybody's going to go, oh my God. And you're going to want to watch it again and again. And like every female dog owner out there, I can tell you right now, that if they're watching this with their partner, their significant other, the husband, and there is an animal in the family, they're going to sit there and go, see, don't you ever do that. So
yeah.
You've got repeat audiences for years to come. At what point did the score come into this? And what were you looking for musically from Walter Martin, your composer?
Well, I didn't, you know, I had a playlist that I listened to a lot while we were making it and before during the writing stages, and I'm not sure the playlist was sort of like, this is what the score should sound like, but I did know we had both talked about the idea of Walter Martin doing a score, who is an amazing musician. He's a fantastic songwriter who has made five or six great records, but then he also was in a band called The Walkmen from New York, who are like an amazing band, and I just felt like it would fit the sensibility of Hang Dog in some weird way, because his songs are very personal and very inviting, and there's
playful,
and there's a lot of vulnerability in them, and I think this movie is in a similar sort of spirit to that, and so it really was just like, you know, again, similar to with Desmond and Kelly, is reaching out, writing, expressing that we're fans first and foremost, and then hoping that they would say yes. And thankfully, Walter did, because I think the score is very singular. And I think I would argue that that's a byproduct of, like, he's not like a seasoned, he doesn't have like 10 movies under his belt. This is, I know that he's done commercial scoring, but this is his first film scoring, and I think it's very distinct, and it doesn't like dip into too many of the sort of tropes that we hear, where there's like a ukulele and someone whistling or something. No offense to ukuleles. But yeah, it was Jen and I just saying, like, just be yourself. And, you know, there are times where you're like, the scene's still not clicking. And yeah, just like, I don't know, I feel like he just knocked it out of the park, though.
Mm-hmm. I like the score on this one, and for many of those same reasons, because it does not get heavy. It doesn't bog you down, even when we have this tense situation of Walt is an idiot and let Tony get stolen. You could have gone so heavy into a sweeping, full-on orchestral, dramatic musical piece, and you didn't. Smart move. No.
Good. We wanted the street music, the band that's on the street, to be playing something that was like kind of jolly and cheerful,
yeah,
as he's like, man, you know, running around frantically. I love contrast like that. I think that really helps sometimes.
Now, you know, mentioning first with Walter, this being his first scoring for a film, this is also your first produced screenplay, Jen. So,
yes.
I'm curious, what was the learning curve? What challenges did you face in writing the screenplay and having it translated onto film?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest challenge was kind of just getting to this place in my life in the first place. You know, I finished that screenplay when I was 40, and I'm now 42, and you know, I have ADHD, and I've struggled with that, and completing things is always very difficult. Starting things is easy. And so having Matt there, you know, when he knew that he wanted to make his first feature and that it was time, and he knew kind of the story that he wanted to go for, and he had actually written a draft of a screenplay a year prior that was set in a different place and was pretty different tonally, or maybe not tonally, but just
plot-wise. Certainly different.
And he knew also that I have wanted to be a writer my whole life, and that I also wanted to write a narrative feature, and so he kind of linked my dream to his, and I am forever grateful to him for that, because I truly don't know that I would have done it on my own. And so having him kind of at my back, giving me support and maybe some nudges and maybe, you know, a little bit of shoving up the mountain.
No shoving. Someone in your orbit that you really believe in because they're just naturally gifted. And Jen, you're sort of underplaying it a little bit. I mean, Jen's written for, you know, TV, like documentary TV, and done short sort of comedy writing, but never to the degree of a feature. So I think it was just about like taking the plunge together, mm-hmm, and not being afraid of, you know, if you fall on your ass and oh God, we look so I don't know. I don't care about looking that foolish anymore, you know?
Yeah, it's something that Matt has always said to me since we started dating and since he started bugging me about my writing, was, so what? Everybody's going to die.
That's it.
I used to really hate that. But, you know, there is something to it. It's sort of like the Marianne Zero Fucks idea of just, you've got to live your life. And you've got to go after the things you want. And so, yeah, if we are any characters in the movie, I'm probably closest to Walt and Matt's closest to Marianne.
Well, they're two good characters to identify with. But let me just remind you, Jen, the man that pushed you up the hill to get this screenplay done is the same one that cut some of your lines of dialogue in the editing room. Don't ever forget that.
That's true, very true.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
So now at the end of the day, you've collaborated on Hang Dog. Will there be another feature that the two of you work on together?
I would like to think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I think taking, like, resetting and following our noses to the next thing. We've talked about a few different projects, and I think you're always just trying to gauge where what you're gravitating to the most. And I think sometimes that can be different for both of us. But I do feel like now that we've done one, I would love to.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only hope that you can get more resources next time around so that the strain isn't on, you know, we had a great team, but, like, when you're this small, people are coming in and out of the picture. And I think a lot of the work is falling on the two of us, our shoulders. I didn't mean to yammer.
You can yammer all you want.
Well, I was just gonna quickly agree that I would love to work together again. I think, you know, despite any challenges that there might have been, I think the positive way outweighs the negatives, and I think we worked really well together. So fingers crossed.
I can't wait to see what the two of you do next. Hang Dog is just, it's so charming. It is so much fun. It's encouragement to everybody out there who is hapless and doesn't think they have it together. There is hope, as long as you have a cute dog.
Yeah, thank you so much. It means a lot.
Yeah, seriously, thank you.
Guys, thank you so much. This has been wonderful getting to speak with you today, and I hope we talk again in the future.
Yeah, same.
Thanks so much, guys. Bye-bye.